You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome to tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Indeed, I am. It's Saturday evening, September the 6th. This is a very special time of the year for me. Today is my brother's birthday. I have one sibling, a younger brother. He is turning 30 years old today. So happy birthday to Jesse. I love you. He is 4 years younger than me. My father's birthday is tomorrow, September the 7th. And, of course, his grandparents' day as well. My dad was born in 1954, so this is always a festive weekend for my family with my brother and father having birthdays on back-to-back days, and it just so happens to be a Saturday and a Sunday, a weekend. I'll be going to visit my brother as soon as the show is over tonight and have a little late dinner with him. And so happy birthday to integral parts of my family. And happy birthday nearly to the political cesspool, who will be turning 10 years old next month. And we got an early birthday present from our flagship radio station here. I think we mentioned about a month and a half ago, that we were getting new equipment. And we have all new equipment now, ladies and gentlemen. We made a little investment in the future of the show. All new mics, all new headsets, all new computers. We even got a fresh paint job. We're not even in the same studio that we were in a couple of weeks ago. Everything has changed over the course of the last month and a half, and it's all been an upgrade and for the better, and we hope that it will bring a better audio quality to you. Of course, the support we receive from Liberty News Radio Network is always just top-notch, and we're working with Sam Bushman to get some new equipment here that would make for a better broadcast. And for the first time tonight, September the 6th, all of the improvements, all of the different components and equipment have been integrated, and we are at full strength. So we're going to knock on wood and keep our fingers and toes crossed that we don't have any growing pains, you know, with new equipments and all. You know, you got to break them in. But we're excited about this, and it's fun to have new toys here at the studio. And, of course, your support makes that possible, and we don't do it just to have new things. We do it to make for a better program and a better broadcast for you, our loyal listener. So that's the good news. I hate to flippantly go from good news there to one of the most horrible stories that I've ever covered in 10 years of broadcasting, and I mean that. And we posted it to thepoliticalcesspool.org just yesterday, Friday, on the blog there. A tragic and absolutely infuriating story that happened a few days ago at a Target parking lot in Bryant, Arkansas. Bryant, Arkansas is a little community just to the west of us here in Memphis, Tennessee. And, you know, you do this show for 10 years, and you're talking about racial realities, and you're talking about crime and the behavior of certain elements of the minority communities here, and you really get numb to a lot of it. I mean, you see the statistics, you know about the rapes, the disproportionate amount of rapes and black-on-white violent crimes and murders, and it just, there's so many examples of it now. Every day, there are a dime a dozen. And so you just get a little cold to it. I mean, you see it, and you hate it, but it doesn't really get under your skin to the extent that it should. But this story really got under my skin, even after all these years. A 20-year-old white woman by the name of Heather Baker was run over by a black man named Marcus Dorsey. Marcus is 39 years old. He was high on a street drug called Sherm. Now, basically what was happening was that this beautiful young lady, 20 years old, had her whole life ahead of her, was just crossing the parking lot, going into Target to do some shopping. This black man saw her, and he told police after he was caught, just minutes after running her down, that he gunned it when he saw her trying to cross the road, and then, of course, fled the scene. Now, she died hours later at the hospital. He didn't know her, didn't have, you know, they had no altercations, had never seen her before. She was white. He was obviously upset about the racist depression that he suffers from, obviously, and ran her over, and that's that. She's dead. So life in the insane states of America keeps getting better and better as we continue to enrich ourselves with this kind of multiculturalism. Now, I'm not going to get into what percentage of the black population are law-abiding citizens and go to work and try to lead productive lives, and what part of them line up on the side of Marcus Dorsey. But obviously this happens entirely too much. To have such a small percentage of the population committing so many crimes is a problem. But what got to me about this story, ladies and gentlemen, was that this 20-year-old woman is not much younger than my wife. This could have been my wife. And if my wife had been in her place at that time, it would have been her. The only difference why this woman is dead and my wife is alive is that my wife was not around Marcus Dorsey when he had this low IQ violent outburst that led him to take her life. I mean, if it had been my wife, what if my wife was holding the hand of my 4-year-old daughter? We go to Target all the time here in Memphis and shop. What if she had been in that Target parking lot and was walking across the street with my 4-year-old daughter? She would have been dead only because she crossed the street in front of the wrong minority. This woman is dead, and she's not coming back. We have pictures of this young woman, Heather Baker, and we have the mugshot of Marcus Dorsey. He has these dead eyes, these eyes that are just dark yellow where they should be white around the pupil, just dark yellow eyes, obviously a drunk, a degenerate. And where's the press on this? You know, the press is so starved to find an incident of white-on-black murder or rage or racism that they latch on with such tenacity to any story that they can manufacture and spin out of proportion, like the George Zimmerman situation, this situation in Ferguson, where all the evidence so far looks like this cop was in the right and defending his life. But, you know, in a situation like this where it's just cut and dry, where's the press? Where's the press? You know, where's Barack Obama? Where's Jesse Jackson? Where's Al Sharpton? Where's Eric Holder? Where's the 40 or 50 FBI agents to investigate this hit and run? Another beautiful white girl who has had her life cut short by this plague. You know, enough, and as someone wrote on our blog, enough people have already been sacrificed to the plastic gods of multiculturalism. You know, when are we going to say enough is enough and we demand civility? We demand that everyone live like normal human beings to the extent that they can. It's completely outrageous. And again, if this was an isolated incident, if this was something that was unusual, it'd be one thing. But, you know, Colin Flaherty can't even, all he does for World Net Daily is try to document black on white crimes and mobs and knockout game incidents. I mean, he gets a dozen stories a day. And he's just scratching the tip of the iceberg. And again, the Council of Conservative Citizens does a good job documenting black-on-white crime. But this example I thought stood out to me as a little bit above and beyond the norm. And, you know, when you put the pictures up there of the victim and the perpetrator, well, what more can you say except rest in peace, Heather Baker. I'm sorry that this happened to you. I'm sorry that we live in a society that tries to placate these insolent malcontents by coddling them and telling them that all of their rage and hatred and vile, murderous thuggery is justified. I'm sorry that white people have fallen asleep at the wheel and allowed this to happen. I'm not talking about vigilantism. I'm just talking about accountability and responsibility for all Americans. There is no excuse for this, and I'm sorry that the press doesn't care about your life. I'm sorry that you're not cared as much as the thug Michael Brown. I am sorry.
Whoa! This is big!
Not just big, it's the Freeze Dry Guys Giant Factory Authorized Sale. This month, save 30 to 45% off on number 10 cans of high-quality Mountain House freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy. Factory fresh stock just arrived, so now is the time to stock up with the finest, best-tasting, longest-proven shelf-life foods in the industry at giant savings of 30 to 45% off. But hurry, supplies are limited to only the stock we have on hand. Call 866-404-3666. Free shipping to the lower 48 states. Click freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com. Hurry, the Giant Factory authorized Mountain House sale is going on now, only from the Freeze Dry Guy. The finest freeze-dried and dehydrated foods available anywhere for long-term storage.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211. Or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. You know, I don't even know how we can go on to another story after covering something like that, because you're talking about the loss of a life for absolutely no reason. Now, the blacks in Ferguson want to take advantage of this situation to rob liquor stores and to plunder and to riot and all that, but compare what happened in Ferguson, even by their imagination, to what happened here. It's somebody just being run over because she was white, and that's all that there was. She's dead, and so what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to talk about this for 5 minutes and, okay, let's go on to the next story. Here we go. As if her life was only worth 5 minutes? I mean, I could talk about it for the rest of our careers, and it wouldn't be enough to fill the void that is left in the hearts and minds of her families, as if, you know, us talking about it does that at all. But, you know, how do you just go on from a story like that? But I'll tell you, it's all being made possible, or it's being sanctioned by the media, who tell people like Marcus Dorsey that he has been wronged and therefore anything he does is justifiable. And that's basically the narrative. And it's not just the media. It's not just academia. It's not just churches these days. I mean, it's even museums. And I was talking to Keith about this. We have a natural science and history museum here in Memphis called the Pink Palace. It's the Pink Palace Museum of Natural Sciences. So when you're thinking about natural sciences, you're thinking about earth science, space science, physical science, so on and so forth. And I've been going to the Pink Palace all of my life. I went there with my grandfather when I was just a little boy, and I've been going there for 34 years. And I like the Pink Palace. I like to go there and learn things. I like to go and enrich myself and get a little culture. And there are still, because the Pink Palace hasn't been updated in about, well, my whole life, there are still some good exhibits there. And I'm going to read you about one. I'm going to tell you about one in just a second. But they've also got this thing. They're beginning to renovate the whole place, okay, for the first time. They're renovating the whole place, and between now and 2019, they're having a 60-something million dollar renovation, and it's going to be brand new. And they've already started to put in some new exhibits. And they have about half the museum now is about the civil rights movement. Okay, so natural science, earth science, space science, physical science, but now it's all about civil rights. I mean, the whole foyer is nothing but the lamentations First of all, the first thing you walk in is it talks about how the Pink Palace at one point in its history used to be a segregated museum and how awful that was. Well, the fact of the matter is, and I don't say this to be funny, I've gone there for 30 years. I'm a member there. I've never seen a black person in there. It might as well still be segregated as far as it goes, because I have, honest to God, never seen a black person in the Pink Palace Museum, ever. So there's that. Unless, you know, yeah, school kids are there on field trips. They also have this exhibit called the Clyde Park Circus. And in the Clyde Park Circus, it was built by Memphian in the 1930s. It was handcrafted. It's a little wooden circle, circus, and it fills a whole room. It's a huge miniature circus, and you can turn it on, and they march around. Well, there's this disclaimer now when you go see the Clyde Park Circus, and it says something along the lines, I just read it yesterday, we hope no one is offended by this, but we wanted to let you know that this exhibit was crafted in the 1930s before we have progressed as a society. And they're pointing out that in the grandstands of the circus, under the circus tent, the blacks are seated in one section and the whites are in the others. Now, I have never noticed that in my life, that the blacks and whites were not integrated in their seating, until they pointed it out. And then, you know, after 30 years, I said, okay, this is what they must be talking about. And then they've got this whole thing about the so-called civil rights movement. And they've got these quotes to show you, or to demonstrate for you, how evil and wicked Memphians were in the pre-civil rights days. And here's one quote that they give you to just show how bad society was before Martin Luther King came and made possible people like Marcus Dorsey. Here's a quote from Thomas Fares, the president of the Memphis Chamber of Commerce. He made it in 1968. This is just to go to show how horrible things were in America. I mean, it was so much worse back then, before we had the benefits of people like Marcus Dorsey in our streets. If the black ministers would tend to their ministering instead of trying to stir up racial tensions, we wouldn't have this trouble. Nothing can be done about the situation. It's going to take maybe 40 years before we can make any real progress. You can't take these people and make the kind of citizens out of them that you'd like. Well, he said it was going to take 40 years. He said that in 1968. I guess he didn't put enough time on it, because race relations have gotten worse. Manifestations of this black-on-white violence have gotten worse. And I'm afraid to say he might have been onto something. Now, I'm going to let Keith. Keith had just got into the studio in the last commercial break. You know, the Pink Palace, though, I mean, what does a civil rights movement have anything to do about hard sciences? I mean, absolutely nothing.
Well, you're absolutely right, James. They don't allow any opportunity to pass to propagandize the population, particularly younger people, about the canons and standards of liberalism with its stock characters of the bad guys and the good guys. Now, apparently Mr. Baird was right, and Exhibit 1 would be Marcus Dorsey. Now, what type of citizen is that gets intoxicated and thinks that it's proper just to run down and kill a girl for no reason other than the fact that she's white? And that's obviously what happened. He's admitted it, but where is the silence is deafening in the mainstream media. I just cannot imagine a more Orwellian scenario than this, James, that basically the white people's lives don't matter. In the rare instance when a white person kills a black person, that's the most heinous crime that has ever been committed. Meanwhile, matters like this Marcus Dorsey event in Bryan, Arkansas, don't even register a comment or don't even justify a comment by the mainstream media. It's incredible.
Well, and then again, when you go to a museum and try to get a refuge, you know, an unbiased refuge, you still get indoctrinated with the same old garbage. And you know, I am for equal rights for all, special privileges for none, but let's be consistent and apply that across the board. Okay, let's not excuse the behavior of one and then say that another group of people, the contributors, are responsible for all the ills of the world. I mean, that's just not fair. It's just not accurate. But I will give the Pink Palace credit on this. And the exhibits that have not been renovated in my lifetime, there's still some historical fact there. And they have a Civil War exhibit there, War Between the States exhibit. And here's a first-hand account that is listed there. at the exhibit from the West Tennessee Historical Society papers. It is in regards to Nathan Bedford Forrest's funeral. And this is what it reads. I was up early the last day of the reunion, eager to see the parade. Main Street was cleared. The sidewalks, the doors, windows, and roofs were crowded, but I managed to find a seat on the curb. The crowd went wild with joy and frenzy when Forrest's cavalry came into view. Flanked on each side was handsome horsemen with the riderless horse of the late general. Then came into view his little grandson, who was seated gracefully on a spirited pony. Following the horse and the grandson came the faithful slave and personal servant of General Forrest. Now listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. He was on foot and carried a live chicken in one hand and a skillet in the other. The people roared, and the rebel yells were louder than ever. It soon became evident that the former slave should not continue his march. A marshal blew his whistle, and the parade came to a standstill. The feebled colored man was put into a luxurious carriage. The old raiders sat gracefully in their steeds. Even those with white beards looked like knights of old and radiated an air of mystery and glamour. Now, it just goes to show, and there was another exhibit about Nathan Bedford Forrest there, his triumphs in military conquest and in business. And it talks about how well-loved he was by his former slaves and how highly they held him in regard. All that's going to be gone when the Pink Palace gets renovated. We know that. But I got pictures of it, and I was happy to read it, and it was very stirring. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to let Keith go wild right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the Political Cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Well, I guess what we're talking about here is cultural genocide. And in some aspects, physical genocide. When you're talking about the death of people like this young woman. And I'm not trying to use her death, and I hope no one takes it the wrong way. I'm not trying to use her death to make a political point, but and I'm not trying to use her as currency to further our beliefs. And I don't know what she, you know, political ideology she held, but
doesn't matter.
What's happening here is the destruction of our people. I mean, we can't celebrate who we are. We can't be proud of who we are. That's cultural genocide. And then you have the fact that our declining birth rates and the increasing incidents with which we succumb to violent crimes and murder, that is a physical genocide. Well, Paul Weston is a voice for our people across the seas in Great Britain. He talks about cultural genocide. We're going to play a quick clip from him, and then we're going to let Keith break it down in commentary.
Being a dreadful, awful, ghastly racist such as myself does tend to give me an advantage because it means I can actually talk about race. And we do need to talk about race because the 21st century, unless things change, will see the virtual extinction of my white European race. Now, people are going to think that's a paranoid statement to make.
For the first time ever, the number of people who class themselves as white British is now a minority in London. The 2011 census results out today show 45% of Londoners are now white British.
People who identify as white British citizens are now a minority in their capital city. People who identify as white British citizens are now a minority in their capital city.
For example, in America, that used to be, only in 1950, a massively white majority country. Today, white babies born in America are a ethnic minority already. This hasn't happened in Europe yet, but in Europe we have a big problem because we are demographically declining as a race. 1.5 children means that tomorrow's generation is 25% smaller than today's. But the important thing to remember is, what is it going to be like for us living as a white ethnic minority in England? Well, it's not going to be very nice. If you look at, first of all, let's look at it economically. According to the Equalities Commission, 50% of black males are unemployed. 50% of Muslim males are unemployed. 75% of Muslim females are unemployed. The ones that do work do not work on very high salaries, but they do have very large families, so they therefore get housing benefit and welfare. Now, the money has already run out for this, so we are already bankrupt. We have soaring welfare bills, soaring housing bills. We can't afford it. So economically, when these people are in a majority, economically, the country is finished. But take it further than economically. What's it going to be like for us physically living as a white minority? And I'm not talking about ambiguous people here. I'm talking literally about your children, your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren, because they are going to have to live as an ethnic minority. So what is it going to be like for them? Well, let's look at a country like South Africa, where whites are a minority. There are 40,000 white farmers in South Africa, and since the end of apartheid, 4,000 of them have been killed, 10% have been killed in horrible, horrible circumstances, which I won't go into here. That is potentially our future as white. So we have a horrible, horrible future ahead of us if we don't do something. So what do we do? What do we actually do about this? How do we ensure that your children are not going to be living in a society that is economically utterly bankrupt? And is it really such a bad thing that Pakistani Muslims are required to go and live in Pakistan, And is it really such a bad thing that Somali Muslims are requested to live in Somalia? It's not such a bad thing at all. What is a dreadful, awful thing to happen is for the white English to be reduced to a minority in their own country, which is something they were never asked about. And I believe this is the greatest racial crime that has ever been committed in the history of mankind. And asking people to go back to their own countries as an alternative to fulfilling this racial crime of reducing us to the indigenous us to a minority in our own country. There is absolutely nothing wrong with asking people to go home. There is absolutely everything wrong with doing this awful racial crime.
Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white.
All right, Keith. So, you know, as we always say, we love all of humanity. We don't love anyone as much as our family. Paul Weston hit the nail on the head here. Is it evil of us to be concerned with the way things are trending? And is it wrong of us to want our children to inherit a country as good as the ones left to us by our ancestors?
Well, of course not. And what we have in South Africa is a canary in the coal mine. It shows us what the future holds for us if we don't take steps to intervene and change the natural progression that has been placed in motion by the left. In America, for example, we get immigrants from the third world, primarily Hispanic immigrants, who come to America not for the purpose of assimilating, not for the purpose of becoming Americanized. They just want to recreate their own societies under more prosperous circumstances. They're more than willing, when they gain the control, to go ahead and change all of our folkways, all of our governmental institutions, to fit their societal norms. Now, this is cultural imperialism at its worst, and we're basically emasculated. We have been emasculated by liberalism to stand up for our own rights. No other group has been emasculated. They're not asked to put their society and their culture aside. They are encouraged to be cultural chauvinists. Now, this is, it's incredible how all of liberalism, feminism, the black civil rights movement, criminal rights movements, global warming, all of these things work together in tandem to achieve the same dispossession. And they're all masqueraded as benevolent movements. And when you understand that rather than benevolent, they're actually malevolent, that's when you're beginning to have the scales fall from your eyes, James. For example, the black civil rights movement was not intended to be kind and good to black people, but to be punitive to whites. Feminism was not meant to be kind and beneficent to women. It was anti-male. Globalism is not for the benefit of the people of the world. It is directed at the destruction of white societies throughout the world, in Europe, America, Australia, New Zealand, places like that. Those are the only countries that are required to basically have open borders and to drop any type of citizenship requirements or limit immigration whatsoever. The flow of goods and services are supposed to go freely into our countries. But, for example, Mexico is not asked to be lenient with Guatemalans and El Salvadorians that try to get into their country. They're allowed by international bodies to be just as exclusionary as they want to be, and they are. See, we've got to understand we're playing a game where the rules are heads I win, tails you lose, and we can't play a game like that without basically cooperating in our own destruction, James.
Excellent commentary, Keith. I appreciate that. You know, we do the job every Saturday night. We've done it for 10 years, the job that most Americans refuse to do. Now, they use that a lot to offer an excuse for the third world invasion of our sovereign republic. But I'll tell you what the job is that most Americans refuse to do, and that's tell the truth. Telling the truth is our business here on the political cesspool.
It's the most revolutionary act you can do in today's world.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to tell more truth for the next segment, and then for the next 2 hours after that. And then we'll do it all again next week, and again and again and again. Stay tuned, everybody.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
From the days of the Romans, there have been legends of a fountain of youth, and now science has found a real answer to slowing the aging process. I'm Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and it's so exciting to know that Time Challenger has capitalized on decades worth of international scientific studies to bring you the most powerful mitochondrial DNA supplement on the market today. Mitochondrial DNA is the power plant of human cells, but as we age, we lose more and more of this precious material. Time Challenger promotes healing and gives cells the power to do their work. Mental cognition may be enhanced, skin refreshed, blood pressure normalized, and signs of aging might be reduced. Time Challenger can also provide enhanced recovery for athletes. Time Challenger, the first step to slow the effects of aging on your body. To learn more, call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. Time Challenger just might be your fountain of youth.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time of the show when the one and only Peter Scoop Stanton, our loyal and faithful contributor from Washington, D.C., joins us to tell us what's on his mind tonight. Scoop, what do you got?
Hey, good evening, Cesspool family. I apologize. I was talking to my secret source, James Bond, here in the district. I'm going to shift a little bit gears, talk about a fiat currency that the IMF wants to shove down our throat. It's called SDR, or Special Drawing Rights. What it is, just like our American currency, it's a fiat currency, which means there's no value to it. And the IMF, World Bank, Federal Reserve, and everybody that controls the world monetary system wants to devalue the U.S. currency, make it virtually worthless, and then put the special drawing rights as the reserve currency and eventually the one world currency. If you Google SDR, special drawing rights, the IMF even proudly puts it on its website. It's been around since 1969, but don't let it fool you. They say it's a reserve currency for other nations' currencies that default or devalue. They help pump it up. But, again, it's nothing but a fiat currency, which is, you know, practically worthless money.
Well, Scoop, we've always told people to beware of the one-worlders. John Birch Society members said that back in the 50s, and they were supposed to be a bunch of pencil-neck geeks. But let me tell you, the geeks were on to something. This seems to be the end game of all liberalism, is one-world government and globalism. And people in America wake up. Their ultimate goal is equalizing incomes throughout the planet. If they do that, and they're well on their way to doing it, if they're going to do that, and they're well on their way to doing it now, Americans have an awful long way to fall. If you don't want your standard of living reduced to third world status, you need to be aware of globalism, and you need to fight it at every opportunity. There is no global initiative on any subject which is any good for the American people. There, I've said it. That's, you know, that needs to be your North Star. And, this doesn't surprise me at all, Scoop. This is just the playing out of the scenario that has been set in motion since the late 19th century with the Fabian Society.
Right.
Are you there, Scoop?
I spoke to my source, Mr. Bond. And he says, sometime this year, look for the stock market to drop once again and the U.S. currency go to free fall. When I asked him, what can we do, he says, well, since we don't have any money, just hold on to your seat and kiss your note. You know what? Goodbye.
That's it. And, see, in Memphis right now, we're having a big dust-up about the local government, the City Council of Memphis and the city mayor of Memphis trying to ram down the throats of policemen and firemen a change in their retirement plan. Specifically, they want to take away a large part of their health insurance coverage, which retirees were promised they would have when they joined the force 30 years ago, and they want to convert their pensions from defined benefit pensions to defined contribution pensions. And the reason is the wolves of Wall Street now are going to prey upon your and my pension and make sure that, you know, if they have 40 years of opportunity, they will eventually gobble up your pension. Your defined contribution pension will be utterly worthless. And they know it. That's why they're trying to change. They don't want to be locked into a situation where they have to pay a certain amount come hell or high water. And, of course, people have long relied on having a steady, reliable income in order to retire. So what you're going to see is retirement becoming a thing of the past. We're all going to be like General Custer and have to die with our boots on, Pete.
I plan on working until I die. I'm at work now, and because millions of people on welfare and millions of illegal aliens dependent on food, shelter, clothing, and medical care, they're dependent on me to keep working. Meanwhile,
let me tell you this. They're going to retire. Yeah, they've retired at age 25.
And Scoop, and this goes back, and I want you to get to this Detroit story because I know where you're going. You're talking about the people that you are paying for. Let me tell you who else you're paying for. You're paying for Marcus Dorsey, the murderer of this white woman in Bryant, Arkansas. You're going to pay. Not only have you paid and subsidized his life for the first 39 years of it that he lived in freedom, you know what you're going to be paying for now? You're going to be paying for his public defender. You're going to be paying for his incarceration. You're going to be paying for his food and medical care for as long as he's in prison. And it might not be too long. I mean, all he did was kill a white woman. And so there you go.
And for his government lawyers, right, who will do everything they can, humanly possible, to frustrate the ends of justice.
So thank you for working for that, Pete. A lot of he needs you.
Right. He needs me, so I got let me work some overtime. But back to Detroit, good old Charlie the Duff said it again. That man needs to be mayor of Detroit like tomorrow. Since Detroit went into bankruptcy, they had a restructuring for the health benefits for its firemen. Before, if you're injured on the job, like any other job, you had something workers' compensation insurance or some sort of workers' compensation, where you go see the doctor and you get taken care of. Well, Detroit Fire Department has no pension plan and no health care plan. So what did Charlie Duff do? Well, he went in front of a fire hose and started the Detroit Fire Hose Challenge. Unlike where people just throw some cold water on their head and send a check, he took a shot in the face of either 1.5 or 2.5 inch hose and went on the ground. And he donated $1,000 out of his own pocket to the Detroit Firemen's Fund. The website is DetroitFirememansFund.com. Now, this being September, folks, stop watching football, stop buying that liquor, stop buying that 12-pack of beer, and start opening up your wallets. Political Cesspool needs some money for its quarter, its third quarter fundraising. Eddie Bombardier Miller's running up in New York. He needs some coins to help the children of St. Jude's Hospital. And Detroit City Fire Department needs some help taking care of their own. There's one young man who is injured on the job. Seriously, he can't work anymore. And the Detroit City gave him $200 a month stipend. So I think that's actually deplorable. And I'd say sue the city, but the city's actually broke. So,
well, I'd say it was deplorable. If Pete, I'd say it's deplorable, but it's the natural consequence of having black political leadership in charge of your city, okay? When you have mayors like Kwame Kirkpatrick and, gosh, who was the first guy? Coleman Young, years ago, basically every last cent has been frittered away that was there to provide for these employee benefits. And unfortunately, people kept voting these clowns in. This is the problem, and the problem is that basically Detroit needs to be allowed to implode so it can become a morality tale and a object lesson to the American people about what to avoid. You know, you can't, that this, you know, takeover of cities like Detroit never ends well. Camden, New Jersey was the first major American city to elect a black mayor in 1969. And I remember seeing him on the television, and I remember his words succinctly. He said, "I don't know where America's going, but Camden's going to get there first." And he was absolutely right. Camden is bankrupt now, just like Detroit. And just like Detroit, it is defaulting on all of its obligations to employees and to the public generally.
Well, Keith, I'll tell you, most politicians are sociopaths. Most of them deserve to be thrown out, to say the least. And it is true about minority leadership in cities. Now, there are certainly exceptions to that rule. There's a fine gentleman by the name of David Clark, I believe is his name, up in Milwaukee. He's a sheriff in Wisconsin, and I'd go to battle with him any day. If you read up on his stands on the Constitution and the support of the Second Amendment, I mean, it's right up our alley. We need more like him. Unfortunately, for every one you got like David Clark, you got 10 like the mayor of Detroit, the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, who said he wants the South to secede and to become an all-black country. You know, we've never said anything like that. He wants, he wanted Jackson to be a black nationalist capital for this new black nationalist, this black nation. Now, we certainly think that people with different cultures and different viewpoints and people who remain at tension with one another should voluntarily separate, but it's a far cry to say something like he said. We've never said anything like that, and we get tarred for it. And yes, people like Henry Brooks here in Memphis, just criminally corrupt, and it does seem to be a little more pervasive in the communities of black political leadership than in the white, even though, how many white people have sold us out in Congress and in the Senate? But Scoop, continue.
Well, that's That's why the city of Detroit elected a carpetbagger. Mayor Duggan, he lived outside of the Detroit city limits. He ran the he was head of the Detroit hospital system, and which was like virtually bankrupt. He turned around and made a moneymaker. He's a self-made millionaire, and he said, "I'm going to move to Detroit, and I'm going to save Detroit." And the people voted for him, despite him being white and being a carpetbagger. And unlike Hillary,
well, he's got he's got his work cut out for him. I'll tell you that. But I admire him for trying. Scoop, thank you for your contributions tonight, brother. And we'll talk to you next week. Everybody else, stay tuned. Me and Keith will be back right after this.
Right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.